Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. I may have been podcasting for 10 years, but I always have a little bit of trepidation when I'm about to interview an artist who works in sound. Out and about on a walk, I can use the ambience to cover up some of my clumsy editing, but in conducting an interview over the internet, there are few ways to conceal my inadequacies. When it came to interviewing Australian sound artist Bruce Myson, I had arranged to walk with him in Greenwich Park while he was in the UK on a family holiday, but fate played its hand in the guise of a train strike, and we never got to do that walk. So what follows is a call I made to Bruce once he'd returned to Coburg, Melbourne, in which we talked about his enthusiasm for walking and how he has put years of studio recording experience behind him in making a piece called Adventures in Sightlessness. How long have you been involved in thinking about devising walks, and how did it all begin?
Because it doesn't have anything to do with walking, but I worked in a recording studio. And what you understand from a recording studio is to make anything, you may have to do the same thing 10 times over. That might mean singing the chorus of the song 10 times over until you get it exactly the way you want it. Or it might even just be half of a sentence of a chorus that you go over and over to get right. But I think, so creatively, since I was in my early 20s, I've understood that to make things, you know, as a sort of intentional act of production. And I think that informs my thinking about walking, in that I don't think about just going for a walk. I sometimes think about how to create and produce a walk to make it into a bit of an experience.
So are you interested in constructing experiences for people, or are you more open to the sort of serendipity of walking?
My general modus operandi, to use some probably mispronounced Latin, would be to not tell people what to do and to enjoy watching as they figure out what to do. This is a bit tricky if you do any art, because people come along sort of being expected that you're going to get them to do a particular something. Can you see the tension there?
Well, I know it myself from doing some similar sorts of things. So
you do this all the time, don't you?
In your heart of hearts, are you a sort of person who likes to go out and go for a walk alone? Or are you someone who likes to go out and go for a walk with others? Or are you a bit like me, where you think, gosh, it would be great not only to do both of those at different times, but also, wouldn't it be fun to get people out to experience, sort of listen to their surroundings, and for them to do something on that walk? Or am I trying to second guess what your enthusiasms are?
Oh, I think I'm a bit like you in that regard, in that I walk every day for pleasure, and I love to go for a walk with other people. I find that a very convivial way to get to know someone and to share time, and definitely want to take the opportunity to make that walk into something with them if I can, and if I can share something with them, and vice versa, that would be good.
Recently you've been involved in devising what you call Adventures in Sightlessness, so would you like to explain to the listeners a bit more about why you put this together, and then what happens if you happen to be involved in one of your adventures?
The last Adventures in Sightlessness was in the town of Launceston in Tasmania, as part of an arts festival called the Junction Arts Festival in September of 2015. And it was located in the old part of town, which was built around 1840, which is oldish for Tasmania and for Australia. In that old part of town, there's the Quadrant Mall, and it's a kind of quarter circle of old cobblestone laneway with a big fountain in the middle and a little network of laneways around it. I picked a walking route that started in a nearby street, moved through a little sort of mini shopping centre, through some back alleys, out into the mall with the fountain, and past the fountain into another incredibly quiet back alley, and then back out to the fountain. And if you wanted to go on this walk, you'd come and see me, and I'd give you some gloves and these improvised knee pads and explain that that'd protect your shins and your hands so that you could feel around with confidence. And then we'd go and walk along the route, and I'd explain that we're going to walk through first and that you could look and see where you're going to go, just have a bit of an idea about what you're going to encounter, so there's something in your mind's eye. We'd walk through the route and go back to the start, and then I'd say, okay, now this is the starting point. You'll close your eyes and you'll set off and try and get to the end point, which actually was the fountain. I said, I'll intervene if there's something really dangerous, like a car coming towards you. But other than that, I'll try not to say something, and you'll be completely within your own experience for the next about 15 minutes. And off they'd go, and they'd make their way along the route, mostly using the walls to find their way. So they'd sort of feel their way along, walk through the route. I was intrigued to see how different people handled it. You know, some people were very tentative, and it took... In fact, the person who was assigned to work on it with me, it took them half an hour to walk the route compared to myself. I think I walked through it in about 7 minutes. So they were very slow. But I had the good fortune to have some professional dancers come and do the walk. And to watch them was a marvel, because they'd glide through the laneways and streets, and they'd reach out just to sort of touch and confirm where surfaces were before, just gliding along, and they had this incredible confidence with their bodies, as you'd experience, and they're incredibly graceful and so sensorily aware. So that was a very great pleasure to watch them kind of walking.
In your planning of it, did you start thinking about people who were visually impaired or partially sighted? I mean, what's been the reaction from that quarter?
Well, it's a good question, Andrew. Look, I'll probably go back to your other question to answer it. I taught sound to uni students, and in their first or second week, I'd take them on a walk throughout the city or the university, and they'd have their eyes closed, but they'd be in pairs originally, and then I got more daring, and I started getting them to walk with their eyes closed from the classroom and walk across a road and into a park. At the end of the semester, I found the students a few times said, oh, hang on, of all the things we did, that was the most fun and that was the most valuable for us in terms of learning. And that made me think, oh, I think I'm onto something here. Over the years, I've sort of experimented with adventures in sightlessness or blind walks. Now, I found one gentleman who is, in fact, vision impaired, and I had a chat with him. Interestingly, he said, look, what you do and the way you talk people into doing it, as in explain to them what they're going to do, is very similar to the training that a vision impaired person would get if they'd experienced a recent change in vision and were being offered sort of teaching about how to adapt to their new situation. It was very clear that for him, very simple daily activities like walking to the shops were just a really, really tricky thing. Even the smallest navigational things were just very difficult. Wanted to try and distinguish what I do from people who do experience, you know, vision impairment and that very different experience of the world, just out of a bit of sort of tact, in that what I'm doing is fun and interesting activity where you can decide about whether you're seeing or not. And I recognise that's very different from not being able to make that decision.
Okay, so the adventures in sightlessness, so they're all about listening walks, aren't they? Listening and overcoming the obstacles of life, and they're coming up your way, rather than a walk in investigating sound. But it's as much to do with how you get from A to B. by listening to your surroundings.
Yeah, that's right, Andrew. And there's some background to it. I, for years, produced sound, you know, as a sort of sound artist. I'd, you know, make compositions and some installations. And I thought that a lot of the people who listened to sound art and sound art installations were other artists. And often a lot of the things that they found interesting were sort of to do with technical things about making that kind of work, or aesthetics that you appreciate if you are an enthusiast of that type of work. I found that a little unsatisfying, and I've wanted to seek a sort of non-expert audience, so just the next person in line or someone, you know, from you meet in the street. I'm interested in engaging them in listening. By this device of, you know, sort of really forcing people to listen, it is a kind of crash course in the kind of listening you do if you train to work with sound. But the other thing was that I'd go to a lot of concerts featuring sound art or experimental music, and we were always sitting down after hours listening to things, and it did drive me crazy. I really prefer to be not stuck in a chair. I like to be able to be up and to move around and explore the acoustic space. I really wanted to involve the body in you know, people's bodies in the experience, and to make it a kind of mobile, fully physical experience rather than just a listening experience. So that was sort of some of my thinking about why I decided to, you know, make this Adventures in Sightlessness project.
Are you augmenting the sounds that people are hearing? Do you at any time kind of issue people with headphones to listen to a track, or is it merely that they should be listening to the sounds around? And
when it comes to working with sound, I thought the best solution was to not involve any recording technology whatsoever, and you would never be in the situation that, in fact, we've run out of batteries or the lead is broken or we can't get the file to play. That increased my pleasure as an artist immeasurably. If we use just the sound of the world in the work, it works every time. And this question of adding sounds to the space, I have mused over this. Should I kind of add something to it? But what particularly delights me and appeals to my sense of kind of letting other people and the world do the work for me is the world throws up all sorts of sounds that I would never have predicted. And I enjoy that a lot. That might be that on the walk, there's a laneway that isn't really open to traffic. But the day that I do the walk, it happens that someone's delivering something with a little truck that makes that backing up beeping sound. And we come round the corner, and suddenly there's the truck backing up and the beeping to negotiate, and the person's not expecting it, and I aren't, and we have to figure out what to do. So I find that very rewarding. Or perhaps a shop is playing music that day. It's completely unexpected, so people have this musical experience that they were. It's a bit of a purist, slightly dogmatic approach. I try not to add any sound whatsoever. Perhaps trying to make up for all the sound artists who are adding sounds to things.
You've worked in creating sound sculptures. I mean, maybe you'd be able to explain what a sound sculpture is to a listener. I'm interested that you sort of moved from creating sounds and soundscapes, or composing soundscapes or sound sculptures, and stepped outside, and you're actually almost sort of leaving behind the technology or the composition of sound, to allowing the person in the natural world to experience the sounds of the environment through which they pass. So you're almost relinquishing something to make some other experience.
If I was going to make an art project, I'd go to, say, Tasmania and think, okay, we're going to have a walking project around the city. So I'd go around and walk and listen to the city and think, well, I could record the city, and what would I do with that? Or I'd go and walk around the city and think, there's things I could probably do with that, and there are interesting things to listen to, such as on the route that we did walk on, there's five separate little acoustic ecologies or acoustic spaces on that walk. Launceston's a country town, but a sort of country town ambience, a very quiet commercial sort of indoor alley or indoor mall with doors at each end, a very quiet laneway, a mall that has a fountain in it, and a space that was a mix of more populated kind of alley area. And all of those spaces sounded different and they feel different in that your body senses how far you are from the walls and the ceilings. In thinking, oh, these are interesting places to listen to, yeah, my thought is, well, if I just put people in them, perhaps they'll hear them in a way that they normally you wouldn't really bother paying attention to. That will be a discovery about how their own perception works, and that's something that they'll take away with them. I feel like I've offered something to people, perhaps something subtle, but it's something that they own about their own perceptions. And I'd rather err on the side of saying, well, look, this sort of seems interesting. What do you think? What did you find in there? And they say, oh, that was interesting. I just walked along, but it was sort of fascinating. I'd rather people own that experience rather than say, oh, you know, Bruce kind of cleverly kind of made this composition, it was very nice. Yes. Laziness or generosity or...
So, I mean, the answer is you had good reactions from the people who took part, or, I mean, I wouldn't say good reactions. The feedback got from people was that they had indeed experienced something different from what they had anticipated.
Oh, we had some lovely... There was a couple who came on the walk who... they just had the very amusing as... dialogue between the two, as couples do, and that revealed sort of their different experiences and how they had very different experiences of things, even if they knew each other very well. So there was sort of like a sense of how two people would find the same thing very different. And the dances were amazing. But I did have on Adventures of Sightlessness was part of another festival, the Festival of Live Art in Melbourne in 2014. And one of the participants, Mick Douglas, he's an artist who's done a lot of walking projects, yeah, completely took me by surprise by being incredibly confident and kind of dancing along the course. He felt his way along a wall and found a doorway. Then he found the doorbell. He pushed the doorbell and listened, waiting for someone to come to answer the door. And just before they answered the door, he stepped to the side so that he couldn't be seen, which left me facing the person who opened the door. And they said, yeah, hi, what is it that you want? And I was completely taken by surprise. Mm-hmm. And he was giggling. And, yeah, this was a really fun kind of fantastic kind of reaction. So even though I've said, you know, I want to offer people whatever they can get out of it and in an open-ended way, I do find some people who are more comfortable and relaxed, who are able to play with the situation, they're often the most fun kind of exchanges.
Apart from just the adventures in sightlessness, what other areas have you been exploring and developing?
The walking projects that I do made a work called Henkel Walk because it started at a place called Henkel Street. And I asked some friends if they'd drive me to a location about 10 or 15 minutes from my house. And then my challenge was to try and walk from that place into the centre of the city of Melbourne.
You were blindfolded?
This is a good question. I wore a hat to protect my head from the sun, and I closed my eyes. We set off, and I walked from the car. I found my way onto the street, and then along a street, and across a road, and then into a park. And I could guess where north was by seeing the sun through my eyelids. But I didn't really know. I started walking and I started imagining where I was in Melbourne because I know the city, having lived here for all my life, I know it well. I could sort of visualise which part of the city I was. I thought I was near this Tullamarine Freeway and I remembered it was a park with some embankments on it. I walked along it, and then I ran into a fence. I thought, hang on, I've got to get round the fence. And three times I tried to walk out of the park and ended up walking into the same fence, and I almost cried. Finally, I find my way out of the park and onto a street, and I cottoned on to using a couple of twigs to run along a fence so as not to hurt my hand all the time. And over the course of about 3.5 hours, I think we walked for, it was something like, I don't know, 5 kilometres. At the end of that time, I figured out where I was, which was on this bike path very near Brunswick Station. When I checked later, the location where I knew where I was 300 metres towards the city from the starting point. And that wasn't a very fast rate of progress towards the objective. But it was very interesting. When I figured out where I'd walked, I realised that the parts of the city that I thought I'd visualised were completely imagined.
What are you planning to do next?
I'm working on some gongs at the moment. I'm looking at some stainless steel ones to install in public in a semi-permanent basis, because I like the idea that people can make sound and music just in passing by and without being experts in the field.
What are your suggestions for a couple of walks that listeners could think about, or at least if they were ever in Melbourne, try for themselves?
Okay, I can recommend trying out a version of the Henkel walk where you get taken to an unknown location with a friend and then try and walk towards an objective and see how you go. The second one is when I was in London, I tried to find a site to do a walk from, and we didn't have much time, and we were visiting Trafalgar Square. I found a route where people could start on the east side of the National Gallery and close their eyes, and if they found their way along the face of the gallery until they get to the Portrait Gallery, at which point they cross over and then go anti-clockwise around the Portrait Gallery until you come back to the square, you'll find that route doesn't have any nasty protrusions that you'll bump into or things that'll grab your hands, and you can safely follow around.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Bruce Myson. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of EZtronic.